Just Nate and Katie today on a fine Monday morning, hoping the weekend treated you as well as it treated us. We got 2 hours in the books. Dave will be back tomorrow. Thanks to Scott Bear for joining us. Raiders, Niners, both in action this weekend. Oh, very exciting and incredible type of stuff. And we're looking forward to wasting no time at all because there's a ton of football this weekend. You like hearing about football, and our next guest knows a lot about football. It's a perfect combination. Sean Salisbury joining us now on KHDK. Sean, no Dave today. It's just Nate and Katie, but thanks for bearing with us anyway.
You're welcome for that, by the way.
Yeah, thank you guys for hearing me. It's good to hear you too. No, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, we figured we could turn Katie loose and, that'd be it. I could just
turn
sit back.
Turn me loose. Put on your helmet and your pads, man. Be careful.
Sean, I want to start. Yeah, that's what I say every morning too. Sean, I want to start with the Raiders, man. They, again, preseason week one, but they won 31-10. I thought they had a solid defensive effort on what was a 73-yard drive. They ended up turning it into just three for the Cardinals, and you got a fourth-string running back looking good. When you're a team like the Raiders that has these huge expectations, how do you go into your preseason, especially week one? You know who your starters are for the most part. What's the strategy there?
I think it's important to find out the depth of a football team in preseason, and you're exactly right. And in truth, guys, most teams go into preseason knowing, let's say there's a, with a 53-man roster, 45 on the roster, and a practice squad. Most teams know maybe all but four guys that are going to be on their roster unless something goes crazy and there's an injury. Then there's two guys that are they think should make it because they were drafted or in the fourth or fifth round and want to make it, because they want to make sure that they have a chance for growth, or that they make sure that their scouting department isn't bad, and so they have that. And then there's two guys that are kind of hanging out there that have to play great and beat a veteran out or beat another guy out. That's the way it is. It's not – this isn't like, in college football where you have turnover and 22 guys leave and they bring another 22 guys in and that there are 75 guys on scholarship. The truth is they know pretty much from OTAs the majority of their roster. So – what you're trying to find out in preseason, in my mind, is one, to get your starters enough work to where they're game ready, but I don't need to see much of them, two or three series. So I see the rhythm of the offense and see that the five guys up front are moving, that they're in unison on the offensive line, that Carr gets in shape, that the running game understands how to blitz pickup, those things. But I'm also letting, and you want to win. Heck, you know what the truth is? I'm not so sure I care about winning with the number ones. I want them to win their series. Not necessarily the score on the scoreboard. I want them to win their series and win their third down matchups. I'm looking for the little things if I'm a coach. Is it third and one? How physical are we in the run game on third and one? Are we a team that jumps off sides and gets pushed around the line of scrimmage? On first and ten, are we a team that can get 5 or 6 yards? But I also want to see how my backups do. I want to see how they close out a game, because they're not used to, on the NFL level, being in pressure situations at the end of a game. They're just not. It's usually your number ones unless somebody got hurt. So I want to see the depth of my team, because in truth, guys, and you know this, by the end of the season, no roster plays all its starters that it started with at the beginning. So you start to look around and say, okay, can Dak Prescott be my backup now after a good performance? Do I need a veteran if you're in Dallas? You look at Oakland and say, okay, is the depth of my running game really good? In Arizona, you say, we know our starting roster. The question is my backup corner good enough to be a nickelback? So those are I'm looking for the little things if I'm a coach inside the game. And then just rhythm and how we pick out. You're Houston last night. How did Brock Osweiler get in the rhythm? Lamar Miller averaging, 6-7 yards a carry. Feel pretty good about that. So you go around the league, with a team like the Raiders who pretty much know their starters, you're looking for the depth of your football team, because in the end, it could be the backup quarterback for two games, your right defensive end, it could be your middle linebacker. That if those guys miss two games, your starters, that'll be the difference in winning the division and missing the playoffs, or winning the division and having a bye week. Those two or three losses throughout the season because a backup didn't do his job could end up being the difference.
Sean, I'm curious. We saw some good stuff from George Atkinson III. We talked about him earlier on the show, but I actually wanted to ask you about DeAndre Washington, who had a pretty good game in the sense that, he had a nice little 25-yard run. He also broke loose on a 32-yard reception. What did you see from him specifically?
I think that versatility matters to me. It's so weird the asset, because when I'm watching him, I'm also looking at other teams. I'm not just looking for, can you run when the holes, you know, for instance, a receiver, can you catch the ball in traffic, in between the numbers? Anybody can operate outside the numbers where you're just running straight, you catch it, step out of bounds. I'm looking for a guy when I'm looking for a young receiver. How do you operate inside the hash marks when you're running over the middle when you know there's somebody there? Same with a running back. When the hole's open, how quickly do you get through it, and how quickly do you hit it quick, get through it while it's open and closed? Does it take a while? Does the line need to hold the block longer? But I'm also looking for a back. How do you catch the ball out of the backfield? How do you catch it when you're coming down the backfield on a screen pass or an option, but also in blitz pickup and who you're supposed to block? So there's little things, and I think what you see if you're Jack or if you're any coach in that situation, you get to see the depth of the fact that the guy's nobody. That's why you look at Tennessee and you say, DeMarco Murray, why would you draft Derrick Henry in the second round? Because you know what? They know it's going to be tough to sustain running with a running back that long all season long who's a pounded guy in Murray, but you also got another guy. So now between the two, you pop in 30-some carries, you're in pretty good rhythm for a team that needs physicality. So when you see what you saw from Washington, you get a chance to see versatility. I can deploy him in different ways. And I'm always looking for ways to formation teams to death. I don't just want to line up and be in the same place. I like it. So think back when Marshall Faulk, and I'm not comparing him to that at all. Don't misunderstand me, LaDainian Tomlinson. When you left the line of scrimmage, when you broke the huddle, I could line him up at wide receiver. I could line him up in the backfield. I could motion him for the slot. You put a defense in a tremendous bind when you can create matchup problems. That's why a position like the tight end position has become so valuable as well. The tight end position, because we can flex them out. They're three-down players now. When I played, you used to have them two downs, and you bring in a third or fourth wide receiver on third down. So the versatility of the guy who can carry the ball out of the backfield and catch it is a big advantage.
Sean Salisbury is joining us on KHK. You mentioned something there that kind of made me curious, so I'm going to get a little insight for some of our listeners here. But you talk about, we call formation effing guys. You like the formation guys to death. I'm curious how often teams, and maybe it's different between coaches, but how often, they'll run, say, a run play, run the same run play, but just run, six or seven different formations throughout the game to give them a different look, as opposed to actually literally running a completely different play.
I think that is a wonderful question, and I try to tell players, I've almost lived off this when I talk to young, somebody will call me into the high school, or somebody will call me in and say, I've gone to a couple colleges in Texas A&M, and they talk about formations and their quarterbacks, and I said, listen, when we got back on the 49ers, and you guys up there in Northern California understand this, that when the 49ers, when Walsh was in, winning Super Bowls, and the Dallas Cowboys in the 90s, They may have had a library and training camp with 500, 600 plays, because having Denny Green, who was one of those who was, a San Francisco pupil, and he coached Jerry Rice at wide receiver, we had a similar philosophy. And I can remember a time when Brian Billick, our coordinator, we lined up and ran 15 different formations in the first 15 plays of the game just to show the defense, and we probably ran them out of six different plays is all. The 49ers were great at that. You'd have Jerry running a slant and John Taylor running a flat route, and then you just change it where Jerry would motion and John Taylor would be inside. The same route, it just had different guy running the different route, and Tom Rathman in the flat and Ma Joe hitting him in the flat. So you run 15 different formations, but it's four different plays. It's not a lot of change. So you run a curl flat combination with six different formations. So I'm huge on that. And I think that's a big part of preseason. I want to see how. And great coordinators do that early in a football game once the regular season starts. Let me throw 8, 9, 10, 12 different formations at them early. It doesn't have to be 15 different plays, different formations. I want to see how they adjust. So it doesn't really matter. To the defense, it looks like you're so complicated. Oh, my gosh, why is this guy doing this? Their formation here. They flex and they trip out and then they motion and then they split out and all of a sudden they shift. But at the end of the day, we're still running curl flat on one side, seeing dig route on the backside with the back checking down or running a swing route. So that is a great – you create deception is what we're trying to do. I'm trying to let you think that I got 400 plays I called in a game, and in truth, I had 15 pass plays, 6 runs, and 40 different formations. But to you, it looked like I ran 80 different plays. And I think that's the genius of good coordinators. Keeping it simple. We don't need to – because the problem is you start to do too many plays, your own players don't know how to operate.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's only so much time in a week you can get it done, guys. So I'm big on the formations, and I think that's a great question.
Sean, well, don't give him too much credit over here. He's in here celebrating, Sean. When you said we always celebrate for good question, but you said wonderful question, and that just took it just over the top for me. Absolutely.
Let's not go over what it was. Yeah.
Sean, before we get into what I'm sure will be 49ers next with my boy Nate over here, I wanted to ask you about something that Jim Irsay tweeted out before their preseason game to Colts fans, saying that, hey, you know, it's a long preseason. They've got two home games coming up in the next 2 weeks, and that's when Andrew Luck will make his first start instead of that night. And then he followed up with, like, yeah, there's some truth on this dark, rainy night that my good friend Rex has never heard of the word preseason. A little bit of trash talking there about Rex Ryan. Your take on that?
Well, it doesn't shock me, and Rex will smirk and come back with something. At some point, Rex will get a good dig in at some point. Now, listen, I know both of the guys. I'm a big Rex Ryan fan. I know Rex sometimes, to me, is too friendly with his players, so I wonder if they like him or they respect him. You know, there's a difference. But he's a hell of a football coach. The thing I do love about him, he's refreshing, is he and Rob both, they say what's on their mind. So I'm a huge... Rex Ryan was a guy I kind of like to play for because I think, man, he'd be pretty cool. Sometimes he's a little out of hand, but I love him, and I do. And I think if Buffalo stays healthy, they'll be better. That's beside the point. But he'll get his things in. But I also been on a team where Jim Irsay was in the front office, and Jim loves sports, loves it all. The problem with Jim is Jim's the guy, and it's weird. And can you fathom? Think about this now. Picture Mr. Kraft in New England. Tweeting. No. Just picture Greg Popovich sending a tweet. Picture, you know, Tom Landry, Art Rooney, Lamar Hunt. Hell, I'm not even sure Al Davis. Al probably wouldn't. I mean, and I love Mr. Davis. I grew up a diehard Raider fan. So technology-wise, I want to look. What the hell's Twitter? You know what I'm saying? So, it's always weird to me when I see an owner that runs a team that, you know darn well, if one of his players tweeted some of the things that Jim's tweeted, he'd go nuts.
Right.
That's the part I don't understand. We're asking, it'd be like the head coach that Nick Saban sending out some stupid tweet, or picture with him and eight sorority girls, and all of a sudden his player doing the same thing, and Nick suspending him for 2 days. Oh, never mind. Nick doesn't suspend his own players. My bad. But anyhow. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Whenever I see an owner like that tweet out something that's not like thank you to the fans, if it's something odd, I'm like, dude, are you 12? So, you don't tweet the damn. Us three, Katie and me, we're supposed to be the tweeting, not the owner of the Colts. So it's just, you got to go to the it's what Jim does. And I think Jim's got rabbit ears. And I like him, but he's got rabbit ears. He hears everything and wants to get his little dig in. But, Jim tweets like he's 16 years old as opposed to the owner of a football team.
So, Sean, just curious in your opinion, when you look at a guy like Mark Cuban, who gets loose on Twitter every, 20 seconds, does Mark Cuban get a pass on this as the only owner in professional sports?
Yeah, we give him a pass because Mark's a guy who almost is – we almost look at Mark like he's the guy who invented Twitter. You know what I mean? he's on the show that gives loans people money, and there's something about Mark, and I don't know why we do. It's like, hey, we give certain people hall passes. If one person standing at the national anthem with their hand over the heart, oh, they're a true American. If somebody got their hand by their side and arms folded, oh, that's terrible respect. You know how it goes.
Yeah,
we have selective criticism for who it is. Yeah, because Mark is that guy who'll get after the refs. He'll say something about an owner. He'll say something about a politician. He'll say something about a player. He'll go to a player through the DeAndre Jordan situation. I mean, all that stuff. So, yeah, he gets a hall pass. I mean this respectfully, and I've met Mark a bunch of times after living in Dallas. Mark feels like – I feel like Mark is – you know, when you go into a boot building like Google, they're all open, and they're 22-year-old kids. I feel like Mark's kind of like, he's still got that in him. There's something, I don't know what it is, but I expect it from him. I expect a $500,000 fine from him at some point during the season, and I expect it. But Mark's, quite frankly, smarter than Jim. Okay, and I'll leave it at that. Mark's a little more clever with his tweets.
I'm trying to like wrap my head around what the upside would even be, because like Jim Irsay is relatively benign, but if you look at Jed York's mentions, every single time he posts something, the guy just gets absolutely roasted, and rightfully so. Why would you want to go through that?
I just, you know what? When you have that kind of money and that kind of influence, that I understand. I mean, people sometimes, you know what? We've all at one point in our life or sometime, it's like Hope Solo.
Yeah.
You know, she's a great player, but she seems to overload her mouth with her ass as much as anybody else, you know, on a regular basis. So, and trust me, I'm one of those. I could raise my hand. I'm one of those that does stupid stuff. Like I've overloaded my mouth as well with stupidity, but I do know that in that position, we just look at him different. We just do. I just can't picture, you know, Chuck Knoll when he was the coach of Pittsburgh saying, "Yeah, I think I'm going to tweet out that I can't wait till this week we're going to kick their ass." It just seems so weird. But you're right. We are selective about it. We like it when Mark does it, but we can't fathom if York or if Jim Irsay does it. So it is selective, but maybe it's just kind of the way we look at them. Not a lot of people at times in the NFL, the Yorks have kind of, the 49ers and the Yorks, they've, you know, let Harbaugh go and all that. And then Jim Irsay's had his troubles off the field. And so, you know, it's selective and stuff. And Twitter can be used for a great reason. But if you're the owner, you ain't trying to get paid per tweet because you got enough money. So don't tweet. Just like I tell the moms of players, please, Joey Bosa's mom, I know you love your son, don't tweet.
Don't tweet.
Okay, don't. Just let it go. Tweet me, you're so happy he's a Charger when it's done. Don't tweet and tell him you said Eli Manning to him. Sometimes I just don't get it. We gotta slow it down and say, heck, my mom would look at me and kick me in the rear end if I did something. So she wouldn't say, son, don't only tweet. We're not tweeting. She would have told my dad the same thing. So there's time and a place for it, and I don't think an owner calling out somebody is probably the time or the place, to be quite frank with you, Jim Irsay.
Well, you kind of mentioned the 49ers there, too. And as much as I'd like to dive into how much parents have changed in general over the last 20 years of athletes, I do want to ask you about the Niners quarterback situation. And specifically, Colin Kaepernick didn't play at all on Sunday. I mean, I know this kind of seems crazy, but if he continues to sit out in the preseason, is there a chance that he doesn't make the roster?
If they're so, in my mind, if they're so blatant and not, I mean, if this is, and I haven't heard anything this morning, guys, and you guys are closer to it up there. There's no injury situation for this, correct?
It was arm fatigue, okay. So not a real injury.
Well, that's always a good one. My arm's tired too because I threw 8 passes to a kid over the weekend. But
hey, it's tough to throw bounce passes in the NFL, brother.
Right, I look at Andrew Luck or Drew Brees or Ben Roethlisberger. I get why they don't play in the first place. I wouldn't let Ben Roethlisberger take 15 snaps in the preseason.
Yeah.
He doesn't need it. I'd get him a few rhythm series and we get out. But Kaepernick's not in that rarefied air of quarterback. So if it is arm fatigue and we continue to see this and he's kind of just been put that deep into the doghouse, he won't make the team. They'll cut him. They're getting other guys a lot of work, and Driscoll, you know, got a little bit of work. I get it, but if this truly is arm fatigue in games 2 and 3, we see a lot of them, then he's back in the mix. So it is an odd situation there. They're not going to keep him if he's the third guy. I can tell you that. He will be gone. So if it really is arm fatigue and that's why he didn't play and then they're waiting, then we better see a bunch of them in game two, correct? I would imagine so, especially for a team. Just think about it, from DeBartolo and Carmen Policy and Joe and Jerry, and even through Jim Harbaugh to now, boy, they got a lot of work to do. A great franchise, a historic franchise that makes football better. It's like when Michigan's good in football or Notre Dame, the football, college football is better. And it's the same in the NFL. When the 49ers, when we're talking about the 49ers as a bottom third feeder, it's like something's not right with that picture. So I'd love to get it turned around. It isn't going to be this year. But if Kaepernick's not the, at least in a competitive for number one, and is a solid number two, or if Gabbert or whatever doesn't play well, you're not keeping him on the roster as the three. So we'll see this week how true that arm fatigue question is and what Kaepernick's situation is for that team.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's – you're not inside the players' bodies and you're not a doctor, so you can't necessarily say, but
sure,
is
Nate?
There? Well, hey,
we
I
don't know where
listen,
he is.
I don't know.
It sounds like he might be a little bit inside there right now.
Like, with something like that, like shoulder fatigue, okay, is there an injury or something similar like that that's like a red flag to you as a former player that makes you call BS and be like, all right, guys, there's something more going on there?
Well, I go back to the days when I was a rookie and the Washington Redskins teams when they kept like six quarterbacks. And the one thing they used to use then, it was back in the day when they wanted to hide a quarterback on the roster. We didn't have practice squads. Hey, Sean or Stan Humphries when he was there, or Mark Rippon early on in their careers, they remember the Redskins, they keep like five quarterbacks because they didn't want them to go somewhere else and cut them, but they knew they weren't ready to play. So they called tendonitis. That's for tendonitis. And Sean, you have tendonitis in your shoulder? No, I don't. Yes, you do. Oh, okay. Yeah, I got tendonitis in my shoulder as a rookie. So, that's even more than tendonitis, man. Shoulder fatigue. As if Blaine Gabbert and the rest of the dudes weren't throwing the same amount of balls. It isn't. He's supposed to be the physical specimen. And it's just the whole – and you know what? Maybe if he does have arm fatigue, maybe that comment last year when he said, oh, I don't work on mechanics. I don't think mechanics matter when Kaepernick gave us that. Maybe it's the mechanics of his throwing motion is why he's not accurate, doesn't make the simple play, and has shoulder fatigue in the preseason after a full off season of throwing and trying to get himself ready. Maybe Colin Kaepernick needs to adjust his thought process and the way he approaches the quarterback position. Because I can tell you this, any quarterback who doesn't believe mechanics matter, they'll be over there holding the clipboard or sitting next to me the rest of the Sundays of their life. He better fix that. So it's a good one. And if it is shoulder fatigue, then we buy it, that's fine. Then we'll see him throw 20 balls this next week to make up for his shoulder fatigue in week one. So we'll see. The 49ers confuse me no matter what they do the last couple of years. So we'll see if that will continue this year.
Sean, always great stuff. We appreciate you joining us. I don't know if your phone's got some kind of, you know, a voice fatigue or something today or a case of the Mondays, but hopefully next week we can get a little bit better connection for you. I don't know. Your phone sounds a little sleepy today, but good stuff from you as always.
Does it really?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I don't know. You sound like you might be underneath your pillow still. I'm not sure.
No, I wish I could say I was coaching yesterday, so it's probably a hoarse voice. I hope it's not staticky. I got a hoarse voice from coaching kids for about 4 hours yesterday.
That'll do it for you.
Hopefully you heard me okay. I appreciate you guys.
No, great stuff. We'll talk to you next week. We appreciate your time.
Thanks. Okay.
Thanks, Sean. Take care. That's Sean Salisbury. You can find him on Twitter @SeanUnfiltered.
And he is unfiltered.
Oh, no doubt about it. Even more so than we got him on here.
What was the phrase which I kind of want to steal it and use it about Hope Solo, how she's got a case of the
she
where
she fills her mouth with her ass.
Yeah.
Stealing that. That's the second time we've heard that. And I mean, there's always so much that it's why we have him on to talk football. We didn't talk entirely football.
Though.
What I really want, because I would have loved to ask him about Hope Solo and her thoughts on that, which we will cover here shortly. Yeah. I also, once he started talking about Joey Bosa's mom, I mean, I hate to go all, you know, get off of my lawn here, but that to me is just one of the silliest. It's spending like 1 year coaching high school football to see the helicopter parents now, where it's just your child can do no wrong. And I'm on Joey Bosa's side with this, but exactly.
Don't get
like
involved.
Why, at what point did parents decide they needed to be involved?
One of the best things about my parents is that they did not. They came to support.
They didn't meddle. They weren't helicopter parents.
Yeah, and it's like they probably knew very minuscule about sports, which means they were just there to cheer. They never opened their mouths. They were there to, you know, root on their baby girl. But God, this is getting a little insane with some of these parents.
We'll tell you about Hope Solo's ass mouth or whatever it is.
Maybe a little about Tim Duncan in the Olympics. We got something on that.
Yeah, half hour remaining in the show. It's all when we return on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHTK. Bring it. Thanks to our guests, Sean Salisbury, Scott Baer, joining us today. Talk a little football. Half hour left in the show. Michael Phelps won his 28th career medal over the weekend. 23 of those were gold. He is by far the most decorated Olympian, not just in our history, but like ever, because he's rad and he just happens to be one of ours. Earlier in the show, we started off, Katie's got 28 rad facts about his medals. We're going to give you a few of them right now. And if you can remember the second of these facts we're about to give, and you call in at the end, because there's going to be a quiz at the end of the segment, you win tickets to the Whiskey, Wine, and Spirits Festival. Katie,
all right,
take it away.
The first one, we're doing five facts, right? Five fun facts. You got to remember the second. The first fact, since 2004, when Michael Phelps won his first Olympic race, only 12 countries have won more gold medals.
Since 04.
Since 04.
Only 12 countries.
Only 12 countries.
Top 15, Mike. Do better.
Yes. Okay. The second one, Michael Phelps has more Summer Olympic medals than 164 countries.
Whoa.
That's pretty amazing, right?
Wait, more Olympic medals?
It has more Summer Olympic medals than 160 countries.
Wow.
Nobody else has even hit double-digit gold medals in their Olympics careers. Nobody else. Nobody else.
That's the third fact.
Yes, that's the third. Only four swimmers in the history of the Olympics have more than five gold medals to their name.
Wow.
That's a fun one. And the fifth and final one. Michael Phelps finished fifth in the 200 fly in Sydney when he was the youngest American swimmer at 15 since the 1932 Olympics.
That's his best one, too.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah.
So there's your five Michael Phelps facts.
So now all you got to do is call 339-1140 and you have to remember the second fact that I gave. And you're going to get, what, some great tickets.
You get a pair of tickets to the Sacramento Whiskey, Wine, and Spirits Festival. It's at the California Museum this Friday, August 19th. I'm sure I'll be there. Dave will probably be there. Katie will not. She's
going to
be.
We know that Dave will be there because Melissa will be all up in that whiskey business.
Whiskey business.
Whiskey business.
That was, the working title for the Tom Cruise movie. Whiskey business, except it was a child's movie. Anyway, go to that. 339-1140, 800-920-1140 right now. If you remember the second Michael Phelps fact, you get a free pair of tickets to the Whiskey, Wine, and Spirits Festival. You get samplings of the finest whiskeys, wines, and spirits. What do you know? From around the region at the Great Gatsby-themed party.
Are we going to do it live?
At KHDK.com. What, take the winner? No.
Let's do it live. Why not?
Why?
Why not? It's
Why
fun.
Do we do that? We got other Olympic stuff we got to get
right.
to. Like Hope Solo running her mouth off. Because I don't know if we're going to have time with that next, but Hope Solo, the U.S. got eliminated by the Swedish national team, which is, of course, a big upset because the U.S. women's soccer team is the best in the world. They won the World Cup. They're very, very good. But they lost to Sweden. And, like in a lot of soccer matches, Sweden was outmatched, but they managed to get on top. And then they just defended their asses off for the rest of the 90 minutes. They counterattacked. They basically played defensive football.
They had a game plan.
I said defensive football. I'm all British
now.
Yeah,
that's all right. They had a game plan. And they executed it well. Their game plan, which is how it should operate in all team sports, even individual sports, is to play to your strength, not try and play your opponent's game. So Hope Solo, of course, ran her mouth off after the loss. And, I don't know. It's one of those things with her where she continually just, as our friend Sean Salisbury says, inserts her ass into her mouth. And do you have the quotes of what she said?
She said partially, "We played a bunch of cowards. The best team did not win today. I strongly believe that." Of which she has been absolutely crushed by just about everyone. USA Today said Solo was an embarrassment to both her country and her team, that they were befitting of neither an American star nor an Olympian. She ought to never wear the U.S. uniform again. Now, she's 35.
She's probably not going to again. But this isn't the first time. I mean, what was it? Was it 4 years ago when she lost her starting job? And she had a lot to say about that. She got into a big argument with the then head coach of the U.S. soccer team. I don't know. She's one of those players where I feel like it's unfortunate, and maybe in this sense a little bit more unfortunate as a woman. That she is a tremendous athlete. She has done
she's the best keeper that the U.S. has ever seen. And
among
the best players that the team has ever seen, period.
The worst, because she cannot stop herself from getting in her own way. She is the ultimate non-team player in a team sport. Because when it comes down to it, at the end of the day,
it doesn't matter.
Well, it's a litany of things that she has done. She cannot keep herself out of the news in a negative way. And when she is in the news in a positive way, which is playing her sport and excelling at it, she even then finds ways to make herself a joke It's an embarrassment. I feel bad that this person is representing our country in the sense that she cannot keep her mouth shut. This is not the freaking, you know, mouth Olympics, because she would win that every freaking time.
She went on to say Sweden dropped off. They didn't want to open play. They didn't want to pass the ball. They didn't want to play great soccer. It was a combative game, a physical game, exactly what they wanted. They didn't try to press. They didn't want to open the game, and they tried to counter with long balls.
So
which,
what
again,
they wanted to do right, is play to their strengths,
they
not
executed
yours.
Their game plan, which if Hope Solo had been paying attention, I'm sure she was, but that's exactly how Leicester City won the Premier League last year at 5,000-1 odds.
Right.
They knew that they were overmatched in terms of talent, and so what they did is they sat back and defended and counterattacked like crazy for 90 minutes, and they won a league title out of it with an inferior team. It doesn't matter what the game is. I mean, can you imagine, like, let's say the Raiders get to the playoffs and they lose their playoff game. The final score is 21-10 and they're upset because let's say they play the Jets. We'll throw the Jets at them. Just randomly throw the Jets at them because the Jets get a score and then run the clock out, running the ball, playing tight defense. That doesn't happen in football. Point is, you play to your strengths, the Americans lost, she's upset, and it's time for her to be quiet
I'm
and eat
actually
it.
A little upset that we actually spent time talking about her.
Why?
Because
you're
she's
the
irritating.
One who spent all the time talking loudmouth, Christensen.
Oh, all right.
Not that.
You know what?
You want to be upset?
You know
look
who
in the
is
mirror.
Not a loudmouth?
Huh?
Tim Duncan. I don't know if we're ever going to hear from him.
Oh, is
or
that what we're going to talk about
him
next?
Again? Yeah, I want to.
That, and we'll tell you which Olympian actually got a terminal closed at JFK Airport. A lot of excitement as we wrap up the show. It's a drive. Sports 1140 KHTK. It's Katie's song here. Tying it off. Congratulations to our winner.
I got a little excited.
Yeah, you did. Had some discussion on the FIFA. Poop spreader Dave's chiming in. He's accusing me of playing FIFA that way.
Because it's true.
Not true, sir.
Very true.
I play with Dortmund. I am on the attack. 100%.
You make your character and make him unstoppable and put him in the front and just attack with
that's
him.
That's part of it. Well, he's an attacking mid. I keep Aubameyang because he's the fastest player on the planet.
So two really good counterattack players
that's
that you
it.
Have at your front.
Well, you got Marco Reus and, you know.
Hope
yeah.
Solo hates you, Nate.
And Dembele.
You know, someone from the 530 on the texty line was like, Hope Solo's 100% right. Nothing she said was wrong, was it?
I don't
understand.
I mean, she's right about Sweden's tactics.
Yes,
but
how
it's
is
a
that
bad
cowardly?
Opinion. Right.
How is that cowardly? I don't understand what it is to why it's a cowardly game plan to play to your strengths, execute it, and have it result in a win.
I mean, it's cowardly if you're on the losing side because you know that you didn't get the opportunity that you felt you deserved. And I think it's just funny.
Is her lashing out publicly because she's butthurt about a loss.
It's immature, is what. And you would
up.
Think that, yeah, right.
How
but,
old is she?
Well, she's 35, but I mean, Hope Solo is not exactly known for her emotional maturity. So, you know, I don't know. Like, on the one hand, yes, one man's cowardice is another man's tactics. But that's,
whatever.
I don't know, that's
I'm
sports, man. Right, that's
I'm over it.
That's how you do it. So, sorry, Hope, you lost,
I'm
and
just,
that's kind of
it. I'm hoping that we don't have to hear anything more from her
nice.
Ever.
Very nice. You wanted to talk
you don't
about
like how I did that, Matt?
Tim Duncan.
If you want to call me stupid, go ahead and do it on air there,
yeah, do
buddy.
It on air. Do you want to hear Hope Solo?
No, you don't.
Tell us about Tim Duncan there.
Oh, okay, so unlike Kobe Bryant, I really feel like Tim Duncan may just drift off into the abyss, and I don't know if we'll ever see or hear from him again at all. Because if this doesn't get him out of his kind of retirement shell, his bunker in essence, President Obama reached out to Tim Duncan and invited him to fly with him to the Rio Olympics to watch the Olympics. And Tim Duncan was like, no, I'm good. Thanks.
Thanks, Barry.
I'm all right.
And
we never even would have known this if it weren't for he actually had talked to his former teammate, Bruce Bowen. It was like, yeah, President Obama invited me. I just don't think I'm going to go. He's like, are you insane? He's like, aren't you insane? He goes, you know, I'm not really into that kind of stuff. I'm not into that kind of stuff.
That sounds like if I were in that situation and I was like, I decided not to. And you'd be like, dude, are you nuts? I'd be like, I mean, just think about how weird it would be. Like, what are we going to talk about? Like, we're flying to Rio. It's me and the president. Like, that's objectively cool. But, like, what happens when it gets weird? Am I going to be allowed to drink on his flight?
He just doesn't. And
there's just so many weird things.
This is one of the things that I love about Tim Duncan. And I'm sad that we don't get to see him play anymore. And I don't know. I'm just sitting here going, yeah,
the type of social anxiety you just don't want to deal
with. He's like so socially awkward for sure.
It's like, that's great.
Like,
I'd love to meet the president. I'd love to take a picture of him. Hell, I'd like to have dinner with the guy. But if you're going to make me sit in an airplane with him for 6 days.
He can have his own wing.
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
The airplane.
What if I say something to offend him right away? Here's this, like, the by far coolest thing about Barack Obama is that he met Michelle when she was a lawyer and he was her intern. Tell me that's not the G-rated stuff right there.
All right.
That's what I'm saying. Anyway.
So apparently some airport issues.
Yeah. Dateline New York City. This story courtesy of NBC. John F. Kennedy Airport's Terminal 8 was evacuated on Sunday night after Port Authority police took a call where shots were fired.
Ah!
The call came
that
in.
That is not a funny thing in an airport.
No, not at all. The Port Authority told NBC that the initial call came in around 9:30, or roughly 1 minute after Usain Bolt finished winning his third straight gold medal in the 100 meters. Of course, it took off on Twitter like crazy because right. That's what things do. But after a preliminary investigation, cops are now saying no shooting at all. One official said, in fact, it was, quote, clapping and banging by people watching the Olympics and were excited about Usain Bolt's win that may have been misinterpreted as gunfire. Usain Bolt is closing down American airports.
How pissed off would you be if you were sitting at JFK and your terminal is evacuated and you miss your flight? You're not. Yeah, it's already a horrible airport to go through. It's crazy there. Oh my God, I would be furious. But here's my thing: what moron does not know the difference between applause and gunfire?
A paranoid moron.
And you and I grew up in similar places. Like, I grew up shooting guns. Mm-hmm. How in the hell do you misinterpret applause?
My
and,
guess
like,
is
banging
you've...
on tables
yeah.
and, like, excitement.
You've probably never heard a gunshot
Absolutely
before in your
not.
Life. So thanks
The 4th
thanks
of July
lot,
must
everyone.
Be the worst time ever for this person.
I know. Other noteworthy things before we tie things off. Congratulations to South Africa and Wade Van Niekerk. Destroying Michael Johnson's 17-year-old record
crazy.
In the 400 meter. If you're not familiar with this guy's story, usually I am very anti, you know, the puff pieces and stuff like that
yeah.
with the Olympic coverage. This guy's pretty interesting. He's the reigning world champion in the 400 meter. He also
basically came out of nowhere, though.
Yeah, I mean, he struggled in the qualifying, so he was running from
the
lane 8.
The prelims were amazing. He cruised in the prelims.
He's the first runner ever to win a championship in the 400 meters from lane 8, and he destroyed a 17-year-old world record by 1/15 of a second. He made it the entire way around the quarter mile in 43.03 seconds. That's ridiculous. And, I mean, with ease.
And
he had him by about 8 lengths.
That's a 400. I wonder what would happen if he got loose on the 100. Like, could you imagine a matchup between him and Bolt?
Looked like he was running 100 for about the last 100. And his coach is what, like 78 or something like that? Did you see the piece on that? His coach is just like this 78-year-old grandmother that they showed her in the stands last night. She was losing it.
Losing it.
Great story. Wade Van Niekerk of South Africa. Also, some of our first-time medal winners. Sarah Robles, the first U.S. weightlifter to medal in 16 years. And Michelle Carter, winning the first American woman to win the shot put gold. So congratulations to all our friends out there. Random, remind you to watch the Sacramento
America.
Republic FC host the Portland Timbers 2 this Saturday at 8 p.m. at Bonnie Field. Purchase tickets at sacrepublicfc.com. Thanks to Scott Baer. Thanks to Sean Salisbury. Thanks to Matt George. And thanks to Katie Christensen. And also Kevin Sherritt's in there doing all the business.
And
it's
tomorrow,
a five-man crew today.
David,
four-man. Five, four,
we'll be
five.
Back.
Yeah, Dave will be back tomorrow. So hold on. He's coming. I couldn't even time it up with the song. This has been The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. Jim Rome's next, and Bobby Jackson sitting in with Scott Marsh today at noon on The Lowdown. So get a load of that.